As I think about this gospel, there's a couple things that come to mind in terms of the challenge that it presents. And so I'll first tell a little story that ties in, and then just an observation that gives the second hand point or the other point, and we'll see where we end up in the middle. At a ball game a few years ago with Father Benedict Okinsola and some people from the Bishop Fenwick Society, which supports the seminary, and they were at the baseball game, and a couple of the guys that were standing around with her talking, and we were standing next to them but didn't have an idea what they were speaking about, but obviously it was about getting to confession, because they turned and they asked us, and they specifically asked Father Benedict, they said, "So, is it true, as so-and-so here says, that at the moment of death, if I make a perfect act of contrition, I'm good to go?" Because they were arguing about, "Oh, you got to get to confession, no." And one of them said, "Hey, oh, I'm counting on the perfect act of contrition, and I'll be all right." And Father Benedict said, "Yes, that is what the church teaches, that if you make a perfect act of contrition, you'll be all right. But let me ask you this. How many things perfectly have you done in your life?" Yeah, probably none, right? And that's why it's important to prepare and actually get to confession, because you can't count on yourself, and you probably, as I do, have a long history of not doing things perfectly. The second piece, so in a sense on the other hand, I read in a book having to do with neuropsychology and philosophy that the whole basis for hypnosis is reducing consciousness to a single focus. So, for instance, for our eye to actually remain in focus, it has to keep moving, has to twitter back and forth, because if it stops, you'd actually go out of focus and lose consciousness. So the whole piece about the hypnosis is to reduce someone's focus to a point where they lose consciousness, touch with reality. Now, what's that have to do with the gospel today? Well, on the one hand, we hear the Lord's commandment, "You are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind," demanding an almost perfect gift of self, an almost perfect offering of all that one is, and that's a commandment. And we immediately come up with the fact that we are confronted with our inability to do anything perfectly. And so we're stuck. Now, if we think to ourselves, though, but if I focus really hard, and if I love the Lord my God with all my heart and soul, and I'm all there, part of us is worried, I think, that we lose touch with reality, that we become a fanatic, some kind of radicalized Christian who can no longer actually operate in society very well because they're so focused on God. Now, I think in our culture, there is a sense that says, well, that's what you ought to be, but nobody really gets there. So we're all mediocre Christians at best, as long as we're engaged with things of the world, as long as we have all these other interests, as long as we spend time doing all kinds of things but prayer. So on one hand, we're confronted with the fact that we aren't going to love God perfectly. And on the other, if we try, there's a good chance that we're actually crazy. I think that's what we're caught in. So what is it that the Lord is getting at here? If we look back through the history of those we call saints, we'll see that those who strive and, as we would say, achieve a very close relationship with God, they don't become extraordinary in the sense of outside of the ordinary, In a sense, they become super ordinary. They become more grounded and more ordinary in so many ways that they are exceptional. And what is the key to that? The key is simply love. The key is simply love. Love actually roots a person in reality better than anything else possibly could, because it allows the person to see with the eyes of love. So when you love someone and authentically love them, do you see their faults? Yes. Do you love them in spite of their faults? No. You love them, period. Not in spite of their faults, but you see the faults. The type of love that the Lord is speaking of is the very type of love that two people have a chance to walk with each other in if they walk with each other for 65 years in marriage. A kind of love that is as plain as dirt, as fruitful as the soil, as life-giving as the ground on which they stand. So when it says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind," the challenge that it confronts us with is, what are you grounded in? How do we look at the world? Period. What's the grounding for who we are? And then what happens is, on the practical level, day in and day out, if I'm working to love the Lord with my heart, that means my emotional life, my affectivity, the way that I feel about the world, I try to feel about that in the way that God would have me feel about that. With all my soul, my energies, what I get enthused about, my concern for the other, my seeing the other, that is grounded in how God sees the world, how God sees me. No pretenses, no self-deception, no rose-colored glasses, just reality. And with all my mind, the most difficult one, because the mind is where we learn to trust our own judgment more than to trust the Lord. So when the Lord says, heart, soul, mind, it comes down to loving God in such a way that we allow God to be the ground on which we stand, on which we build up our own character, our own sense of being in the world, and how we see and think and feel in the midst of the world. Now that's a challenge. Will we do it perfectly? No. Is it unattainable? That's not the right question. Will it make us crazy, the pursuit of it? No. It just makes us ordinary Christians who know Jesus Christ. And what does Jesus give as kind of the test case? You shall love your neighbor as yourself. You shall love your spouse as Christ loves his church. You shall love your children in a way that allows them to see the beauty of life and the goodness of God. You shall love your community, your family, your neighbors, all those who God brings into our lives in such a way that they will know that the first commandment is the highest commandment, and that your heart, soul, and mind are grounded in the Lord.